Sometimes.
Sometimes.
Shinadanaha. Becoming bereft of all riches. To. But. Tasman. In that forest. Shaya. A bedding for lying down. Asana. Of a sitting place. Stana. Of a residential house. Vihara. Of enjoyment with a family. Hinaha. Being bereft. Yachan. Begging. Parat. From others, friends, and relatives. Aprati labda kamaha.
Not getting his desires fulfilled.
Parakyutristehi. Becomes greedy for the wealth of others. Labate. He obtains. Avamanam. Dishonor. Translation. On the forest path of material existence, sometimes a person is without wealth and due to this does not have a proper home, bed, or a sitting place, nor proper family enjoyment. He therefore goes to beg money from others, but when his desires are not fulfilled by begging, he wants to borrow or steal the property of others. Thus he is insulted in society. You can repeat. On the forest path of material existence.
On the forest path of material existence.
Sometimes a person is without wealth.
Sometimes a person is without wealth.
And due to this does not have a proper home.
And due to this does not have a proper home.
Better sitting place.
Better sitting place.
Your proper family enjoyment.
Your proper family enjoyment.
He therefore goes to beg money from others.
He therefore goes to beg money from others.
When his desires are not fulfilled.
By begging,
he wants to borrow or steal
the property of others.
Thus he is insulted in society.
So
purport by Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. The principle of beg, borrow, or steal principles are very appropriate in this material world. When one is in want, he begs, borrows, or steals. If begging is unsuccessful, he borrows. If he cannot pay, he steals. And when he is caught, he is insulted. This is the law of material existence. No one can live here very honestly. Therefore, by trickery, cheating, begging, borrowing, or stealing, one tries to satisfy his senses. Thus, no one in this material world is living peacefully. So, pachit shina darastu tasman. Sayasana stana vihara hinaha yachan parada prati labda kama parakya drishtir labate vamanam. So, Om Gada Tivadandasha Gananjana Shilakaya Chakshuru Nidhitam Gena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, one thing we should understand is that everybody in this material world has what they need. They don't have what they want. There's a difference between needs and wants or desires. Because desires, in one sense, are practically unlimited, as Krishna says in the Gita, that avritam ganame tena gani non dichavarana kamarupena kondaya dushparena and lenacha. Thus, one's lust is never satisfied and it burns like fire. In other words, the more you have, the more you want in this material world. However, we do understand that everybody has what they need. And how can we say that? It said in the Shveta Svata Upanishad, Nicho Nichanam Chaitanas Chaitananam Eko Paonam. He opened it out to come. That Krishna is actually providing the needs for all the living entities. This verse is very interesting. Nicho Nichanam, there is many eternal living entities, and there's one supreme living entity. That supreme living entity is Krishna. And that supreme entity, Krishna, is providing the needs for every every of the plural living entities. So, of course, sometimes when Krishna is providing our needs, it causes us some disappointment. But that's actually what we need. You understand? We need to be disappointed in this material world, which is a very important principle. If we're not disappointed in the material world, we'll stay within the material world or desire to stay in the material world. So this is part of living in this world. In other words, needs are always there, and even the need for being disappointed is there. So we find in the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even with himself, when he comes to this world, we find that his desires are sometimes apparently not fulfilled in order to teach us this lesson that even if you're God, if you're in the material world, there's problems. Of course, this is his plan. It's not that his desires are actually unfulfilled, but his desire is to actually show us the nature of this world. I mean, take the pastimes of Lord Rama, for example. That's mentioned here in this verse that sometimes one is without a proper home, better sitting place, no proper family enjoyment. Okay. So Lord Ram basically gets married to Sita Devi, and he's living at home with his family. Home means the castle, palace, with his family. And then all of a sudden, this Kaikeyi turns against him. And Kaikeyi turns against him because of the instigation of this Mantura. Mantura is, was the nurse of Kaikeyi and also the nurse of Bharat. And Mantura is taking the side of Bharat against Ram because they wanted to enthrone Ram as the king. Dasarath had this whole plan to do that. So Mantura is instigating Kaikeyi to stop this whole thing. And so Kaikeyi, in the beginning, she was loving Ram so much, and then all of a sudden it changes to envy. So this is one instance of proving the nature of this world, the nature of this world, that someone may be loving you so much, and the next minute they envy you, or they hate you, or they try to cause you problems. And actually sometimes in familial relationships, it actually alternates between the two. You know, one minute it's love, it's almost like a sine wave. I don't know if any of you know what a sine wave is. A sine wave is something in electricity that goes up and down, up and down, up and down. So it's just like suka duka, suka duka. It's like, or like a roller coaster. A roller coaster is something you go up and you go down, up and down, and then you're sick the whole time. And people think that that's enjoyment. I remember when I was a young child, my father took me on a roller coaster. It was the only time in my life I'd get on a roller coaster. And after that, I renounced it. Because this is not enjoyment. Where people go to the amusement park to have some enjoyment by going to this thing called a centrifuge, where they're pinned against the wall, the thing spins around, and their skin is like peeling off. Not exactly. And they think this is happiness. Or they go into a horror house in the amusement park and they get scared to death. And they think this is happiness. Can you imagine the standard of happiness that people have within the material world, that they have to be scared or torture the body or be nauseous in order to be happy? Anyway, so this is this is Sukha Dukha. So anyway, so here you have Kaikeyi, who is Dasarath's youngest wife, extremely beautiful. And she caused Ram so much pain. Not only did she cause Ram so much pain, but here was Dasarath, who loved her like anything. He was thinking, this is my trophy wife, pet wife. You know, actually, trophy wife means a wife that you show off for everybody else, like you have a trophy that you won a tennis match or something. You know what a tennis match is? Tennis match or something, you have these trophies on your wall, on the shelf, in the same way. But he was very proud and very loving. And actually, even after he decided to enthrone Ram, he just went to her to celebrate. That was his whole idea. You know, he didn't go to the other wives. He was thinking, I want to celebrate with my wife, because the wife is called Stri. That means the person who increases the enjoyment. Because if a man is all by himself, it's just, how much material enjoyment can he have? I mean, he just sits there and laments, you know. Unless he chants Hare Krishna. If he chants Hare Krishna, he can be happy. But otherwise, he just sits there. What is he going to do without social life? Get drunk with his friends? That's all he can do. So the wife is necessary to increase the paraphernalia and the enjoyment of this material world. Absolutely required. And then, so anyway, so he went there to sort of enjoy this idea that he was going to enthrone Ram. And so he went to Kaikeyi, and then what did Kaikeyi do? She just like broke his heart, thinking that she was going to be smiley and happy and give him a big hug. Instead, she was crying, twisted his knife in his heart by telling him that he couldn't enthrone Ram. He had to send Ram to the Dandakaranya forest for 14 years. So, you know, even in the pastimes of Ram, you see all these the troubles in the world. And then so Ram goes to the forest, and Dasarath, being the father of God, I mean, you know, can't get more exalted than that. He dies feeling separation from his son Ram. So there's pain, even if you're the father of God. What to speak of your father of an ordinary person? Even God's father has a lot of pain. And he dies feeling separation. And then Ram's in the forest. He has to endure all this. Then his wife is kidnapped. You know, Sita Devi's kidnapped by Ravana. And he's in so much anxiety. And Lakshman is so much anxiety. Lakshman is feeling guilty the whole time, because he feels that he was responsible for Sita's being kidnapped. Why does he feel that? Because what happened is that when Marich, Uncle Marich, took the form of the golden deer and attracted the attention of Sita Devi, and then Sita Devi insisted that Ram should go get this deer and, even if necessary, you know, kill the deer and take the skin so she can enjoy it in the palace later on, or give it as a present to her mothers. Then when Ram actually killed the deer cried out, Lakshman, Lakshman. And Lakshman wasn't willing to go, because he knew that Ram could not be defeated under any circumstance. But still, because Sita insisted, in fact she actually made some accusations against Lakshman that were just really painful. Because Lakshman was so dedicated to the service of Ram. I mean, there's no question of any other desire other than to serve Ram. He was simply, even with Sita, was just looking at her feet. He didn't even know what her face looked like. Because that's how we identified her, by her, the little anklets and jewelry on her ankles. So she accused Lakshman, and this is so painful. When you're so dedicated, she accused Lakshman. She said, you want your brother to die so you could enjoy me. Can you imagine? I mean, being accused. It's so painful in this world to be accused of something you didn't do. I mean, something you did do, it's all right. You just try to hide the fact and smile. But something you didn't do? I mean, that's the amazing thing. Just like if you go on the internet, you can find at least the leaders in ISKCON are being accused, many of them are being accused of things they didn't do. I mean, if I wanted to find out what I didn't do, I'd just go on the internet. I find out things about myself I never knew. That aren't, obviously they're not true, but, you know, wow. So anyway, so that was so painful. So here is the brother of God, and he's God too, and he's being subjected to this intense pain. And so he runs to try to find Ram, and he leaves Sita Devi alone. And then Sita Devi is kidnapped. Of course, we understand it's Maya Sita. So Sita Devi is kidnapped by Ravan. And so the whole time he's feeling guilty, he feels responsible because he didn't obey his brother's instruction to always stay with Sita Devi. So he feels that he's the one responsible for Sita Devi being kidnapped. So he's in pain and anxiety the whole time. Can you imagine that? I mean, we all want to live in a world that's free of anxiety, right? I mean, anxiety is just so distressful in this world. It's interesting also, the more you have, the more anxiety you're in. If you have nothing, probably is not, and you're renounced from the world, there's no anxiety. Like Madhavendra Puri, who was the Paramahansa Sannyasi, he didn't make any endeavor for food, and he wasn't in anxiety whether food would be there. Because if we artificially take that position up, we'll be in anxiety whether there's going to be food. Whether there's going to be food or clothing or any of these other things like that. But if Paramahansa, like Madhavendra Puri, or Lord Vrishabhadeva, who was acting like a Paramahansa in spite of being the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they're not in anxiety. They give everything up, and they're not in anxiety about it. Because they understand Krishna's going to take care of them. You have to have that full faith. Actually, Prabhupada said that's the prerequisite for someone who wants to be a sannyasi. Abhaya Shatva Sham Shuddhi Jnana Yoga Vivastatehi. One has to be free of fear. Because he's understanding Abhaya Sattva Samshuddhi Jnana Yoga Vivastati. He understands that Krishna is taking care of him. He doesn't have to make any endeavor. It's like Srivas Thakur, when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "What do you do for a living?" And Srivas Thakur said, "I have a 1-2-3 technique. I'll drown myself in the Ganges if I have to fast for 3 days." And Lord Chaitanya said, "Even if the goddess of fortune has to go begging, you will always have enough." So a devotee should be, anyway, pure devotee. We can't imitate artificially this position that, you know, Krishna is going to provide for me, therefore I don't have to do anything. Actually, we do have to do something. We have to serve him. But in any case, let's get back to the story. So Lakshman is complete anxiety. Rama is complete anxiety. And then they struggle all this time trying to find Sita. You can imagine the frustration. They had to wait during the 4 months of the rainy season. They couldn't do anything. Then after that, Sugriva was getting intoxicated and he forgot that he was supposed to look for Sita Devi. So they're getting angry. Then after that, they finally find Sita Devi and then fight with Ravana, get Sita Devi back. And then Rama's thinking, it's not proper for me to accept Sita Devi back because she's been in the house of someone else and she has to go into the fire. And then eventually he takes Sita Devi and then eventually he has to send Sita Devi away again because the people are criticizing. Because Rama's understanding his duty is primarily to the citizens. When one takes the position of the king or president or something like that, then the citizens are considered his children equally with his own physical or bodily family. So it's a very high position. So Ram is in complete anxiety and depressed because he sent his wife away. And she stays away the whole time. And finally, when he's getting ready to accept her back, and he just wants to make one final attestation as to her chastity, she just can't tolerate it anymore. I mean, it becomes so intolerable for her because she's been insulted time and time again. I mean, she's the most chaste lady, Sita Devi. She's Lakshmi. Lakshmi never deviates from the service to Narayan. And she's so insulted that she's so much in pain that she says, "I can't take it any longer." Can you imagine? And she's Lakshmi, expansion from Radharani. And then she calls for Mother Earth. Mother Earth comes. The earth opens up. She enters into the earth. And she disappears. And then Ram is completely upset. He has to manage the earth for another 10 million years or something like that. What? 10,000. 10,000. That's a long time. Still, it's a long time without his wife, you know. And Of course, the children. Another thing is Ram's children, Lav and Kush, are there. They may have to be without their mother. They see their mother enter into the earth. I mean, horrendous. I mean, you read about all these tragedies nowadays, you know, the collapse of some place in Bangladesh, some sewing place in Bangladesh where people die, or earthquakes. But you would think that God wouldn't have to experience these things. So Rama is there, you know, without his wife, the children without the mother, and he has to remain there. And then finally, at the end of his pastimes, he enters into the Sarayu River along with his associates and goes back there. But then poor Hanuman is told to stay in the material world. And Hanuman has to just like be chanting Sita Ram, worshipping his deities in the mood of separation practically for millions of, tens of millions of years, as long as Lord Ram's pastimes are being chanted or understood. Can you imagine that? And here's Hanuman, the greatest devotee of the Lord, having to experience anxiety, separation, you know, intense misery, being separated from the Lord. So, and then even in Krishna's pastimes, you have Krishna's greatest devotees, the gopis. Krishna leaves them when he's 16 years old, and they're crying the whole time. And there's stories in the Viragda Madhava, Lalita Madhava, where Radharani drowns herself in the river, and other gopis throw themselves off of Govardhan Hill to kill themselves. I mean, it's just like, it's so intense. And then you have the Goswamis of Vrindavan, who are separated from Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Raghunath Das Goswami wants to commit suicide by jumping off of Govardhan Hill because he's feeling so much separation from Lord Chaitanya. So the point I'm making is that even if you're God or the best devotee of the Lord or an expansion of God, then there's misery in this world. Of course, for God, all these things have an internal or esoteric purpose. I mean, when the gopis are separated from Krishna, it increases their love for Krishna in the material, in the spiritual realm or in the spiritual affairs. When one is feeling great separation, one is connected with the beloved. In the material realm, you're always separated from the beloved. But in the spiritual dealings, the connection is there whether one is meeting, whether one is anticipating the meeting, or one is actually separated from the beloved. So there's an esoteric reason. But let's not talk about the esoteric reason right now, because that's not really the topic of today's class. The exoteric reason is that this material world is like that. And no matter what you do, you're going to have to experience those things. So therefore, we should follow the example of Lord Ram in that we're attached to our duty. We go on doing our duty. We go on doing our duty regardless of these things that happen. Like Lord Ram, actually the cause of his distress was that he did his duty. The cause of his distress in leaving was that he followed his father's order. The cause of distress in sending Sita away was that he was doing his duty for the citizens, the proper duty for the citizens. So, of course, usually it's not like that for us, that, you know, the cause of our distress is doing our duty. But sometimes it may be. Sometimes it may be. That if one is accepting responsibility, just like my own position, accepting responsibility in the Krishna consciousness movement, then there's anxiety, you know, there's emails and distress and bills, and then the idea that what if this happens in the future? You know, the mind is always thinking like that. What if this happens? What if that happens? What if there's World War III? No, I'm not worried about that. That would be a relief. So we wouldn't have to worry about bills anymore. So one voluntarily accepts this. And the war, one voluntarily accepts anxiety on the Lord's behalf. The more one advances, because that anxiety in the spiritual realm for Krishna's service is purifying. You know, if we want to live an easy life, Prabhupada said an easy life and Krishna consciousness don't go well together. So once you take, what is the anxiety? Once you take the anxiety in spreading Krishna consciousness, and maintaining and serving the Krishna consciousness movement. And then one will become very Krishna conscious. You know, the question is how to become Krishna conscious very quickly. And not simply by going to Vrindavan and looking for Krishna under different bushes, Radha and Krishna under different bushes, but really struggling for Krishna. I mean, there's no question of like one particular point of retirement. I mean, sometimes people ask, what are you going to do when you retire? And not jokingly say, I'm going to play golf. which actually for me would be misery. The other day I was driving by a golf course. I was riding my bike in Australia. And I was watching the people just walk with their little carts, you know, from one hole to the other, you know, just hitting the ball. And it's just misery. It's just like Prabhupada said, they're simply trying to forget Krishna by engaging in that fruitless activity of playing golf or any of those sporting activities. So basically, we should be willing to take that anxiety. And Prabhupada said sometimes that anxiety would keep him from hearing the holy names. You know, because there was Tamal Krishnamurti went to Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, you know, so much anxiety I'm in, and it's hard to hear my japa. And Prabhupada said, me too. So if we want an easy life, I mean, that's one thing, we can have an easy life, but there'll be anxiety from other sources then. You know, there's going to be anxiety, but it's better we take the anxiety for serving Krishna, and then we advance nicely in Krishna consciousness, and Krishna will take care of our needs. We don't have to be in anxiety about that, like what of our personal needs. Krishna will give us intelligence, because we have to follow that intelligence. I mean, sometimes we fight against the intelligence that Krishna has given us. And specifically, we should dedicate ourselves to the service of our spiritual master. It's a very, very important principle. And you see, Prabhupada did something that was really unique in establishing the Krishna conscious movement. And that was, unique means that he really established his position very, very strongly in the rituals that we do. For example, in the Krishna consciousness movement, we do certain things, rituals or prayers, that aren't done in any other organization, specifically the Gaudiya Math. For example, we chant the Guru Vashtaka prayers in the morning for Mangalarti. The Gaudiya Math, they don't do that. They chant something about Radha Krishna. I think it's Radha Krishna Pranamoya Yugala Kishore that they chant some Radha Krishna songs, which are fine. And actually, it's interesting that after Prabhupada left, they started chanting Vibhavarishesha during the Mangalarti in Vrindavan, but Prabhupada actually instructed us to chant the Guru Vashtika prayers. And that was under the instruction of some member of the Gaudiya Math that they started doing that. And they said, well, we'll just have the Guru Vashtika at the Samadhi. But actually, Prabhupada's instruction was during the Didi Arti, you're supposed to chant Guru Vashtika, Samsara Dhavanandi Loka, you know, like we're talking about. And then Prabhupada also established a daily Guru Puja, which was never done in the Gaudiya Math or any other organization. It's very interesting. Because Prabhupada, why did Prabhupada do that? Because he saw that there was a lack in the Gaudiya Math of the dedication to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. I mean, why was Prabhupada so strong about establishing himself as the founder of Charitamrita? We gave the presentation Sunday about a month and a half ago about Prabhupada, the founder of Charitamrita ISKCON. I don't know if any of you remember that. Some of you may have been awake during that time. It was a Sunday feast. We gave that presentation. So why did Prabhupada do that? Make that, I mean, of course, Prabhupada is the Foundacharya, that is his exalted position. He is unique. He is the fifth Foundacharya for the Iron Age. So Prabhupada did that because he wanted to stress something that had not been stressed enough in the Gaudiya Math. In the Gaudiya Math, they did not stress enough service to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Had they done that, they would have established a GBC, and the Gaudiya Math would have continued as a unified organization. Now it's split up to many, many, maybe even 100 different organizations, which are, many of them are not getting along with each other, and many of them are falling apart at this particular time. So Prabhupada instituted that to show us the primary importance of dedication to the order of the spiritual master. And toleration is like toleration, remaining in ISKCON, serving ISKCON, cooperating, I mean, which is not always the easiest thing, because we have devotees of different natures. Even, you know, on the GBC conference, you know, we have, like today I have a GBC meeting on the phone. We have a phone conference every week, and there's some devotees with very sharp tongue. Yeah, I don't know if you know what sharp tongue means. I mean, ready to jump down your throat if you say anything. And it's just toleration for the service of Prabhupada. You know, if we wanted something that wasn't, there wouldn't be any distress or pain or anything like that, we'd have to give up Dharma. And our Dharma is serving Prabhupada's movement, not simply serving Prabhupada. And so that should be everyone's Dharma. And you take trouble and you take anxiety, yes, and you take the stress, and your desires may not be fulfilled, but your needs will be fulfilled if you do that. So, anyway, any questions or comments about these points? No? Questions, comments, arguments, problems, issues? No? Yes? You're curious.
Yeah. A little bit earlier you were talking about that we should, no matter what we're having to experience, we should be attached to our deity regardless of things that are happening. And I was just curious about how we can become attached.
Well, the duty is personal. If we take it as impersonal, then the duty is not very attractive to be attached to. That's the point I was making. Duty is in relationship to spiritual master and Prabhupada. You know, why do I feel duty-bound to remain serving in the Krishna consciousness movement? It's not that I'm just attached to an institution, but it's my relationship with Prabhupada. So, you know, if you just have duty for the sake of duty, then it becomes really dry. You know, why should you do this? It's your Dharma. You have to connect it with a person, either with God or with the spiritual master. And otherwise, it's just like, you know, 16 rounds, what do I get? Another day older and deeper in debt. It's just ritualistic then. But if it's done, if you know it pleases someone, like I know that my remaining serving ISKCON pleases Prabhupada. I mean, I know that. There's no doubt in my mind. Then it's much easier because it's done out of a sense of devotion. But if it's just like I'm supposed to, you know, it's a Vedic rule, then it's just too dry. You understand? So I can do austerity if I know it pleases someone who I want to please. Then austerity becomes easier. Anyway, the whole material, even if you don't do austerity, the whole material world is austere. You know, you have a choice. You know, don't do austerity for Prabhupada. And then you just, you know, then you'll be in anxiety, but that anxiety won't be purifying. And whoever said the material world is going to be nice, that your body is going to be young for your whole life. Whoever said that, you know. Of course, you thought that. But whoever said that? Whoever said that, you know, join the Krishna conscious movement and, well, be happy that was said, but whoever said there wouldn't be any trouble? We have the unrealistic expectation that we join the movement. There wouldn't be any trouble, that, you know, that Krishna would come down to save us every time we had some bill to pay. Just like when we joined the movement, one time we were on Sankirtan, we couldn't afford to pay the rent for the house. It was like $300. In Gainesville, Florida, everybody was in anxiety. Some stranger came up and gave us $300 and then ran away. We didn't even know who it was. So we thought, oh, that's Krishna. That'll happen for the rest of our lives. But Krishna was doing that, So as you progress in Krishna consciousness, Krishna doesn't do that as much. You know, he makes you struggle a little more, be a little more anxiety, take a little more responsibility. And, you know, you see Prabhupada, he left this world in anxiety over the fate of his Krishna consciousness movement. And that's perfection. The spirit, you can't get out of anxiety. No matter how much you try, you can't. On that happy note, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.